So while my presentation is loading, I'd like to thank you all for staying for this session. As a community health educator at First Health of the Carolinas, it's a pleasure to be here. This presentation will highlight work that's conducted by First Health of the Carolinas Community Health Services with funding from the Kate B. Reynolds Charitable Trust. The expansion of services to include individuals with intellectual disabilities builds upon over 10 years of offering health behavior change programs in community-based settings to help disparate populations get active, eat healthy, and quit tobacco. This presentation will not be sharing research findings, but we'll be sharing the successes and struggles of public health practitioners who are just starting to work in the field to meet community needs related to disabilities. There are no relationships disclosed. There are four learning objectives attending this presentation. The objectives are based on the belief that individuals with intellectual disabilities are often an overlooked population in community-based health promotion. The presentation will follow the same outline that was presented in the APHS abstract in terms of highlighting the background, methods, results, and conclusion of Healthy Living's expansion. Now, just to give you a brief overview of First Health. First Health is a private, non-governmental, non-for-profit healthcare system. It's located in Pinehurst, North Carolina, which is about an hour and a half south of the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area. The system serves 15 counties in the Mid-Carolinas and includes three hospitals and over 15 primary care outreach facilities. The work shared in this presentation will focus on First Health's primary service area, which includes five rural counties: Hoke, Montgomery, Richmond, Moore, and Scotland counties. The next two slides provide a snapshot of the population served by First Health. Regional demographics and health statistics were used for developing and prioritizing programs to be offered in the Healthy Living in the Mid-Carolinas initiative. The needs assessment used this data available in 2006. Except for Moore County, an area that attracts a large number of retirees to its golf communities, Pinehurst is a frequent host of U.S. Opens, the service region is more diverse and low income than North Carolina state averages. This slide shows health conditions and risk factors common in the area. Asthma hospitalizations, diabetes, and heart disease mortality far exceed state averages, especially in Richmond County. Risk factors such as obesity, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure are found in over 30% of the population. Rates of uninsured average over 20%. Like the nation, the rates of poor health are reported among low-income, uninsured individuals. To address the poor health status and prevent future chronic disease in the region, First Health proposed the Healthy Living in the Mid-Carolinas initiative. With a prevention lifestyle approach, the project aims to enroll 7,000 low-income adults in health behavior change programs to provide the skills and support to improve risk factors. The health behavior change programs offered include PLAY, which stands for People Living Active Year-Round, a program to increase physical activity, the Happy Kitchen to improve nutrition, and First Quit to promote tobacco cessation. The project started in June 2007 and has 7 years to reach those most in need of health promotion in our area. To date, the project is exceeding its enrollment numbers. Now, in December 2007, as we were kicking off the Healthy Living project with a press release and marketing campaign to low-income churches in the community, First Health received two requests for classes from instructors that were working with individuals with intellectual disabilities at a compensatory education program, also at a vocational rehabilitation program. The request prompted First Health to reach the needs of this special population and consider service expansion. Meetings with instructors, plus also site visits, confirmed for both class participants and the staff at these locations that programs were needed. As the instructor suggested during class break, and this is a quote, "All they eat is chocolate honey buns and Mountain Dew. The individuals with intellectual disabilities are living, learning, and working in unhealthy environments." At the same time, a review of national and state data also showed disparities and recommended a call to action for offering health promotion programs to the special population. So we were ready to go, but of course we had some reservations. It was obvious that the literacy level of our materials were not appropriate. Would it be feasible for our health educators to conduct the learning activities in the existing programs and effectively communicate with this population? Is change possible among this population? And how are we going to capture it? Searching for technical assistance and experts in the field began immediately. Found the research of some of those who are with us today. Also met with the North Carolina Office of Disability and Health, and discovered that Special Olympics has a healthy athletes program, and their health promotion discipline actually addresses physical activity, nutrition, and tobacco. From these resources, our health educators became familiar with appropriate communication skills, were introduced to people-first language, also the Special Olympics has the Ten Commandments. There is a handout called Communicating with People with Disabilities that was actually uploaded with this presentation that you might want to check out. So now I'm going to proceed to the methods section. We'll focus here on First Health's response to the call to action and discuss the sites, participants, and programs offered for the health and living expansion. So this part here shows our sites and participants. Based on suggestions from those two initial instructors who reached out to us, we found 8 sites across our service region to approach to offer classes. All 8 sites welcomed the Healthy Living Initiative and promoted our modified classes. Participation was voluntary. This chart highlights the 3 types of sites, compensatory education, group home, and vocational rehabilitation centers. The RCC and SCC on these sites represent Richmond Community College and Sandhills Community College, which actually oversee the compensatory education and vocational rehabilitation programs in our area. A total of 159 individuals with intellectual disabilities enrolled in the classes. Staff were also offered to formally participate. 28 support staff and caregivers joined the classes, so a total of involved 187. Now, before we begin the program with each site, a North Carolina HealthSmart policy and environmental survey was administered. Questions addressed food, activity, and tobacco-related policies and place features. Completed with site directors, the surveys provided insight that there are definitely several potential areas for improvement. The average site score was 52%. The range was 9 to 18 out of a possible 25-point total. A copy of this survey is available at eastmontmidmoreNC.com. Now, the next few slides will actually look at our participants, and these are the participants that are individuals with intellectual disabilities. Based on time, we'll focus on this, although the staff were also very similar on many factors. Overall, the sites included diversity in gender, race, ethnicity. You'll see that 45% of participants were African American Black. Early middle age, kind of that late 30s, and living at or below 200% poverty level were predominant. Now, looking at the types of disabilities in our Healthy Living sites, common types reported by site directors included Down, Fragile X, Williams, and Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, as well as autism. Intellectual disability was characterized by significantly below average intellectual functioning, IQ below 70, but then they also had to have the factor that they were impaired in terms of carrying out various aspects of daily life in the normal social environment. Approximately 97% of our participants were identified in the range from mild to moderate in terms of level of disability. Here's a slide in terms of looking at the free survey of our participants' health. We only collected a very small amount of health information. Staff and caregivers helped participants complete the survey. Overweight obesity was significantly high among a sample that was taken at three sites where the staff were actually willing to measure height and weight in order for us to compute the BMIs. 22.1% were classified as overweight, 43% were classified as obese. Looking at the range, several participants also fell into that extreme obesity classification. One female was 295 pounds, she was only 5 feet tall, and she stayed extreme 57.6 BMI. Tobacco use was low among participants, although much higher among staff at each site. Other health conditions reported included those common in the community, as well as those frequently reported in the literature to be higher among individuals with intellectual disabilities. Celiac disease was a common one reported among individuals with Down syndrome. Okay, now briefly, I want to just highlight the key behavior change programs that were included. Play People Living Active Year-Round is a 6-week program helping individuals to meet the 2008 physical activity guidelines with the philosophy of activity is fun for all ages. You can see Ms. Carla hula hooping there. The program is based on the social learning model. Participants receive step counters and resistance bands during the 1-hour weekly sessions. Now, as a health educator, I was there for the 1 hour a week. However, staff and caregivers were encouraged to reinforce this throughout the 6-week time period. Program modifications for play include adding goal point stickers and developing reward fitness buddies. Also, adaptable fitness equipment such as armbands for the step counters and encouraging power wheelchairs to incorporate more manual time. We also developed what we call fitness playing cards to go along with the play theme that actually gave visuals of the muscle strengthening exercises. The Happy Kitchen is the cooking nutrition program, 6 weeks, 1.5 hour sessions. This program was actually developed in Austin, Texas at the Sustainable Food Center. This teaches skills and self-sufficiency in preparing healthy, economical meals. Here you can see the 6 sessions looked at each different food group, some sample recipes. The big thing with this class is we actually cooked in class. The participants also received the ingredients to take home and make with themselves or their group home residents to actually practice. We modified this in terms of some food safety precautions. One of the big projects was actually developing step-by-step photo recipes so that they could follow along to make this independently. Uploaded with this presentation, you'll see the original broccoli with garlic. It's a yummy one, so I encourage you to try it out. That's uploaded with this presentation. You can see how we changed that original to the photo recipes. Tobacco cessation and secondhand smoke were also included in terms of doing carbon monoxide screening with participants, celebrating National Tobacco Use Awareness Days, and for referring to our local First Quit program and the North Carolina Tobacco Quit Line. For the dilation tools, we did a mixed methods here. This is also, you know, with community and with limited support, but we did pre-post program surveys where participants and staff caregivers did 6-month post-interviews with the site coordinators, also site visits. Direct observation was part of this. For the nutrition, we actually had participants keep their snack wrappers to see if maybe that honey bun changed to something healthier. And then also, we had our step counter logs that staff helped to keep track of with their weekly activity trackers. So I know my time is limited, but we are to the results that I want to briefly highlight. We were excited. We saw some behavior change. This slide here shows in terms of some of the nutrition improvements. We do have farmers markets in our area that I was excited to see the staff ended up taking participants there to do shopping. We saw increased levels of physical activity. Walking more was the big thing. For the physical activity play program, 90 participated. You're going to see excellent class completion rates there. Now, based on the other presenters, these are individuals who are already scheduled to go to the compensatory education or vocational rehab program. Transportation is provided. And you'll see here where pre and post, we did have small increases in terms of that moderate to vigorous aerobic minutes, also muscle strengthening and flexibility days. Nutrition improvements, 157 of the individuals elected to participate in the Happy Kitchen. And you'll see here also some small 6 week improvements in terms of the recommended number of servings of whole grains, fruits and vegetables, and low-fat dairy. Of course, there's a lot of limitations with our data, no comparison or control group, also self-report, and we found difficulty in terms of really measuring that intensity. My big part, though, is that we have some successful results with policy changes. Curriculum integration has been a big thing that started during that six-week program, but then over the past year and a half has really been enhanced, and where we can see where, okay, additional nutrition improvements and physical activity among the participants is happening. This image here shows where now there is two formal days of active living incorporated to the schedule, which adds about additional 60 minutes a week. Also, the meal prep time, they're actually using the healthy recipes with the participants. Environmental change is very exciting. This picture here shows a vocational rehab where they ended up just plowing the grass behind their site, and now that is a walking trail that they use during each twice a day during their class breaks. So in conclusion, with a supportive environment, we believe individuals with intellectual disabilities are successful in making health behavior changes. But strengthening the organizational capacity, especially the organizational capacity related to both the staff, but then also the physical environment, is critical for success and sustainability. And you can see Chris here, he grew that watermelon in his own backyard. In terms of further research and suggestions, in terms of recommendations of taking action, really looking at multi-level health promotion interventions, looking at advancements in health communication, but then also integrating professional preparation of public health professionals to work with this population. It's very rewarding work, but also very needed work. These are just quick acknowledgments to the North Carolina Office of Disability and Health, Special Olympics, Edna McNeil, who is a champion instructor at the Project Succeed program, and of course also to all our participants, staff and caregivers. These are also big thanks for resources that were used as a start of continuing this work at First Health. And there's my contact information in terms of LinkedIn, Twitter, and we also have an active Facebook account, which every once in a while you'll see pictures of this work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have about 7 or 8 minutes for questions, so we'll open up the floor. Any questions for the group? We had two remote interventions and two that were on site. So obviously we've got a nice variety here in terms of looking at health and wellness. Question? Yes. Can we get a microphone? Or?
So for Dr. Gray's group, looking at the veterans coming back, are you thinking about working collaboration with the VA and expanding the physical fitness programs?
Well, did I pay for that? No. Yeah. The there's a guy in at the St. Louis VA Jefferson Bear. He did a study, a clinic with 356 veterans looking at endurance using arm ergometers at the same time we were doing ours. So he read my study and I read his study. We said, maybe we should work together. This just happened 2 weeks ago, so you're clairvoyant or something.
Other questions? You got a follow up there.
For the rural group that was doing the web-based program, did you have any problems with internet access, high-speed access in rural areas?
Yes. Wait.
Is that on?
I don't know. Is this on? Yeah. Okay. There were definitely a few issues that people had with access. I didn't see anything systematic, but some of the issues that came up, we had the fact sheets and the link to the health plan of employment website came over email, and a lot of people had spam kinds of things, or they were getting so much email that they had a hard time differentiating what they wanted to receive and what they didn't want to receive. And so those are some kind of just that I'm thinking of right now of things that we will in the future try to address, possibly, you know, highlighting what the subject, how it's going to come in, what it's going to look like. Are there things that they need to do ahead of time in terms of filtering to make sure that we're on a white list or whatever? So there were things like that. Not everyone participated. So we actually had an amazingly good number. Over close to 70% of the people actually developed these plans. We were able to track that and print them out. So that is amazing from our standpoint in terms of engagement. But there were, we did follow-up program evaluation kinds of data gathering, and there were, you know, things where I had a hard time to go or moving around the website. I was unsure what to do, those kinds of things. So anyway, yeah, they exist. It's a new medium for a lot of people.
Just that a lot of rural areas don't have access to internet, high-speed internet, so downloading the images, things like that, takes a very long time.
Yeah, we did not have too much of that. It was a requirement that they had a computer with internet to get in the study. So, you know, we may have been screening out people who, you know, weren't used to or we're having problems prior to that, so.
We have, through implementing Living Well with a Disability, but also a weight loss program for people with physical disabilities, it seems like a huge component of the success is related to the social aspect. I mean, even for people who are not losing weight, they stay in the program, and I really suspect strongly that the social aspect of it has a lot to do with it. I should preface it with, it's all people who live in poverty and are probably somewhat socially isolated. And I wonder if you guys can tease that out at all for your interventions, or have been able to, how much of it you think is based on the social interaction or the motivational interviewing, and how much of it is based on the tools and information, or is it just kind of all interwoven?
Who is that directed to?
Anyone.
The two middle presentations.
Two middle presentations. That's Carrie and
go.
Yeah,
I can make a few comments on that. I did not do the coaching and the PEP intervention, but through conversations with the woman who did do the primary amount of the coaching, a lot of their conversations started about life. So they built kind of a social relationship and then moved into this behavior change kind of thing. So I think she viewed that's anecdotal, but she viewed that as a really important piece of the program. And then just another quick second comment, my dissertation is actually on web-based programming, and we're hearing a lot that it's still coming in the data, but we're hearing a lot from participants that they really want a social networking piece of that program, and more and more and more. So we have some preliminary stuff, and they want more, they want more, they want to be able to connect, they want to be able to talk. And so I do believe that social piece is really important within these remote programs. So how do we work that in?
So I'm the one that actually did the motivational interviewing for our study, and you know, I'm historically a huge proponent of face-to-face individual or, you know, group work where people are communicating. I'm not a huge tech fan, which is kind of ironic since here I am doing all the tech work. But, you know, and so I came in kind of slightly skeptical, and I do think there's a huge advantage to having group-based work, and I think we saw, you know, better results with working well when they were group-based and there was that social interaction. That being said, I got a lot of feedback from folks talking to them that they were working on really personal problems that they had a lot of shame about, they had a lot of guilt about, there was a lot of stigma around a lot of the things that they were working on, and having a really safe place with an individual on the phone, for them, I think, was really, I mean, I ended up working on some, you know, we were working on secondary conditions that were depression and anxiety, along with other things, and so having kind of a more limited contact with someone, I think, was helpful for some folks in terms of having a safe place where there weren't 10 other people looking at them while they were trying to figure out and explore kind of how these behaviors were affecting their lives. And I do think we did get a little bit of feedback in our evaluation, the second piece of our program that, or the evaluation of our program that, that there were some folks who really were dissatisfied with not having an interactive piece in the web-based part.
I also want to say that we actually tossed around the idea of having an interactive piece as we were developing the website in a way that people could do that kind of online forum sharing. And because it was a research project, it was kind of an unknown about how people would share, and without having the resources to have a moderator and that sort of thing, it wasn't something that we really wanted to push through the IRB, to be honest. It's a lot of people with sharing personal things, and there's kind of that you're collecting kind of personal information, and who's getting that, and what does that mean, and do people have access to each other's email? Just logistically, it was something that we decided not to do. And that said, I think that the results were pretty amazing given the fact that that element wasn't included, and that may be part of the sample that, like a VR sample, they're maybe getting out doing other things, so it's getting picked up somewhere else, that need for communication or peer sharing or whatever.
Any other final questions? I just had one final question for you thought you were going to get away easy, right? Sally, Matt. Oh, I'm sorry, David, and I'll ask Sally your question.
Amanda, I think you missed our presentation, but the part of it was the fact that Mike Scheller over here and Sue provided motivation to the people when they came in. We made a mistake by not having a good measure of the number of friends they had or the amount of time they socialized every day. We do have a participation measure, and we're still analyzing the data. I wouldn't say it looks real promising right now, but Mike started working with me 10 years ago, and he motivated me to exercise. So if he can do that to me, that's pretty solid. But when you go into this Enabling Mobility Center and you see Mike working with the people, you see them, half the reason for coming is to be there with him. When our funding ran out, we spent $10,000 a month for transportation. And when that ran out, people still came, and what they learned to do was share rides with other participants. Was pretty amazing. People actually got jobs that came there and went to other places for their exercise. So it's a lot of social component to it. Want to add anything, Mike? Are you okay with that?
No, a lot of good stuff being shared.
Yeah.
Was your, I'm not sure, I'm not familiar with First Health. Is that kind of like an HMO, or what exactly is that organization?
Can you Tammy. Yeah. First off, it's actually a healthcare system. Okay. So with hospitals, primary care, we have 6 fitness centers, we have EMS, there's an insurance plan. So it's considered a healthcare system.
And the cost for the program for the adults?
All of these were free through our funding through the KB Reynolds Charitable Trust. So it was all free programs, and of course the part of it was we had this grant looking at targeting low income and disparate populations. So of course when we first started the grant initiative, never imagined ourselves working with individuals with intellectual disabilities and then trying to build these relationships with low income communities. Well, here we've got large groups of individuals, and then not knowing if we have the capacity or can we do this, and now we've jumped in, and to me it's been the most rewarding work professionally.
Yeah.
And then of course we have what we saw here is just that focus on the behavior change program, so now it's turned into this 2+ year relationship. I'll be back to the sites next week because using other projects we have, like the community garden.
That's my question, yeah.
Right.
So the sustainability of it is building it into the community.
Right, and connecting. It's kind of like, oh, well, you know, we would love to go to the farmer's market. And well, now the farmer's market is going to be accepting EBT, SNAP benefits. And so it's just started this whole new partnership with this community. I've also become involved in the Healthy Athletes program in terms of a clinical director in North Carolina. So it's just one where you never know in terms of when you're really looking at disparities in your community populations you might be serving.
Right. Great. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Let's give another round of applause to this wonderful set of presenters. Thank you, have a good day.